I'm here in Trillick and I'm talking to Esmond Jamieson. Esmond, your brother Robert was killed in the Troubles. And are you bringing me now to where
I'm bringing
all
you
this
now
happened?
To where he was shot. He was 21. He was coming home from his work at 6 o'clock in the evening, and he was a member, part-time member of the UDR. He got off the bus and he walked up the road, and he got off the bus. He was a mechanic in Ulster West Eponoma. And he walked up the yard. He walked 50 yards up the road, and gunmen walked out behind him and shot him in the back and in the head, and left him in the middle of the road lying. And my mother found him.
What age was he when he was killed?
21.
And why was he killed?
It was more than because he was a part-time member of the forces. So he was. My mother went out to lift him, and she found him lying in the middle of the road. And she cradled him in her arms until he died, and she reversed the car from the crossroads a mile to that neighbour's house way back there to get help. So she did. And when after the doctor arrived, Robert died, but he never regained consciousness because there was too much damage done.
Yeah. Where were you, Esmond, at that time?
I was out with my father working a cattle. So was. I was 16 at the time. So was. Had been with my brother working the night before at a Land Rover, my father's, that he was doing repairs to, getting it ready for MOT. Now, that's the crossroads.
And so where is that? What's it?
That's where he got off the bus.
What's the crossroads called?
Morrow's Cross. Morrow's, M-O-R-O-W-S, Cross. And there, there's the memorial to him there.
Oh, I see. So he was murdered on the 17th of January
1974. So he was.
Did your mother ever and father ever recover from that?
My father died at 57 years of age. 6 years later, he died in 1980. He never got over it. It killed him. So it did. And my mother died there this year. But my mother never really... She never really said a pile to us about it, or what way she found him, or anything else. She kept it all inwardly, so she did.
Was she bitter about? I mean, did she hold, obviously, if somebody kills your son, you're going to be very angry at somebody.
No, she didn't. Definitely didn't. My mother, in latter years, would have been a member of the different pensioners clubs and stuff, which is a mixed there's all members of the public at it, and she was at all them, and some of her Catholic neighbours would have said to her, if that happened to me, I couldn't mix, you know.
Yeah.
But my mother was originally from Bonboy in Cavan, so she was that, so she was born reared, and she come down here, married my father. He was from Florence Court, to come down here in 1950.
And what brought them to this part of the country?
They couldn't live in the south any longer. They had to get out.
Why is that?
Because no jobs for Protestants in the south that time on the border. They weren't wanted. If they went for a job, jobs that time, there wasn't many newspapers. The jobs were up in the shop windows. I mean, they're telling us. And underneath the job would be Protestants need or Catholics only apply. They didn't want the Protestants. That time in the 1940-50, the main exodus of people were from the south of Ireland, were Protestants. All the farms around us were bought by Protestants from the south of Ireland. Our farm was one. Armstrong's beside me is another one. Hewitt's is another one. Them were all people that came from the south of Ireland, because they were pushed out. So they were, and they all came down here, all of them. The majority of people here are all from the south.
What work was your father doing?
My father was a farmer.
And so, did he have to sell his farm in the south, in Cavan, to...
There were farmers. My father was a farmer in Florence Court, which was in the north. My mother there was three girls on the farm they came from in Bonboy in Cavan. And my grandfather, he sold the farm. And my grandfather and grandmother lived with us here until they died. So they did. So that's where they were from. And they came down here. My grandfather, they used to rob the house at night. He could keep nothing. He slept on the hayshed.
Yeah.
Before he got married. Any luck of pound he had, he couldn't keep it in the house. He had to hide it. Because they used to come in and take it on him.
Goodness,
they were persecuted, yeah, up there in the 40s, 30s and 40s. They were tortured. So they were, and they had to get out.
And your father, he found a piece of land?
Found a piece of land down here. All these farms here were up for sale roughly in the 40s, 50s. So they were.
Is that because of the war, maybe?
That was after the... After the country was divided, the six counties and that were divided... the Protestants were it wasn't enough then. They never accepted the Protestants for a lot of years. All was a lovey-dovey, and then they started to push them out. They didn't want them. They told them to get out.
And how was your brother, why was he fingered at and
my brother was...
And why was he killed?
My brother was murdered because he was a handy target. He was easy got. It was very handy for gunmen to stand up a lane. And once he walked up past the lane, to walk out behind him and shoot him in the back on a January evening, a cold evening. He was a handy target. They knew he wouldn't shoot back because he had no chance to shoot back. If there's any chance that he could have shot them, they wouldn't have been there. He was only an old cub, as far as I'd be concerned now, when you think back on it. He was only a cub at 21. It was no problem for two or three men stand behind a hedge and wait for an old cub to walk past and then shoot him. They knew they had no problem getting away. And that was the whole thing.
Was anybody ever held accountable for that murder?
No. Nobody was ever held accountable for that murder. We know who done the murder.
Who did the murder?
The men on the men. Well, I'm not going to give names.
Yeah, of
some
course,
of them are dead now.
Yeah.
But the as the man says, that leaves on the threes knew who done the murders in the area. You know, so they did. Some of them dead now. They're gone. And as the man says, the historical society was out here. They done a whole examination on the thing there a few years ago, and they didn't start to question my mother. And I went up to them and asked them what they were doing, and they were telling her things. I says, what does a woman in her 80s want to know what happened to her son for? Yeah. Things that she never knew at the time, or how he died, or what killed him, or anything else. And as I told them that time, he always says, you'd like to know who murdered your brother. I says, I know who murdered my brother. He says, what do you mean? I says, I can tell you now. Say, who murdered my brother? And I says, some of them dead. So I named the men, and I says, that boy's dead. Oh, no, he's not. Well, I says, when you know something, says I, you come back and tell me. For say, I know he's dead. So he was dead. And I says, anyway, I have young lads of my own, a young family of my own coming up. And I says, I don't want the hatred in them. I don't want the boys back walking the street at the lick, saying me seeing them every day. Says I, let them stay away when they're away. Yeah. And says I, my young lads is coming up, and says I, they mix with everybody, and I don't want them coming up and having to live through what we live through. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of
and
course.
That's the way of it. Like, this area here would have been a hotbed in the 70s. There was a lot of trouble. Thurlick and the Moor would have been very hot Republican hotspots in it. The neighbour down the road was shot. Oil delivery man. They fired 100 and some round into his lorry. And he was hit, I don't know, 6 or 7 times. He's still living. He lives down, yes, that filling station in Thurlick there. And they riddled his lorry and done their best to kill him. Now, he never was right after it, you know.
Yeah.
And it was all because he was supplying oil to the security forces. So it was, you know.
And so to try and to pick up the pieces after that and to try and continue, it must have been difficult. It must have been hard to live up here with that kind of...
My father never done any good after it. My father would have had a lot of Catholic neighbours. A lot of neighbours' houses he killed in. And a lot of people... And my father would have been well-liked and well got on with. But my father never done any good after it. So he didn't. He went... That was 1974. He started to fail in 1978. He took a heart attack in 1979. And he took cancer in 1980 and died. I wasn't too old at the time. And so he did. My mother, my granny, broke her heart. My granny died in 1978. So she did. My mother... Well, what was wrong with my father is he bottled it in. He never talked about it. He never said nothing to nobody. And it just has killed him. My mother, I suppose, we were still young. The youngest in the house, I suppose, that time, the youngest in the house would have been... When Robert was more than about 10 years of age. So there's still family to be reared. My mother had to stay strong and for us. And but you knew it was there. It was always there. You knew it was in the back of her head. It was always there. But she kept strong for us. I'll give her that. So she did. But she never ever said anything about it. She never said anything. As the boys said, the only thing, or she didn't hold it again the other side. So she didn't. She still worked with the Catholic community. She was out with them.
Yeah.
But she would have liked to have seen the people that done it, brought to justice for it. You know.
What about the community locally here in Thurlick? Did they come around your mother and your father to support them after the killing?
There were a lot of Catholics here at the wake after the wake after the funeral, at the time he was murdered, so there was. And there was Catholics about. There was Catholics here that were at this time we were murdered, they were nearly afraid to have been seen with my father or my mother in case there'd be a tag put on them, if you know what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
So there would. My father... as regards coming to see him, the local priest, he had the two priests in the area, came up to see my father and mother to the wake. And they said it themselves in the house before them. They said it themselves. They had a service. Robert was murdered on a Thursday and he was buried on a Sunday. On the Friday night in the mass in the town, the priest gave it out. He says, about a young lad been murdered up the road, and it was uncalled for and unjust. And a percentage of the ones in the chapel got up and walked out.
Did they really?
Yes, got up and walked out. You know, so that.
So was there that, that intimidation?
There was
by...
that. That's what I'm telling you. There's
yeah.
Between Thurlick and the Moor, there was a hotspot area of republicanism.
Yeah.
You know. So there was.
And so the communities in both sections were...
It did it.
They were...
It caused a certain amount of... I don't know whether you call it fear or what you call it. Because after Robert was murdered, then Patsy Kelly was murdered down the road. And
that was a Catholic man. Yes.
Murdered. So he was supposed to have IRA links and all this, but that's hearsay. And that caused fear among both sides of the community. For people were starting to think, who's next?
Tit for tat, yeah.
Who's next?
Yeah.
And that's just about it. The only thing about it is, the boys that shot Robert just weren't my neighbours, but it was my neighbour set him up, if you know what I'm getting at. It had to be done. It was a local person set you up. It's a local person points you out.
And did you honestly believe that? I mean, was
yes,
that something...
Yes, I do believe and still believe that. We still believe that. So, and the person, your Catholic neighbour that set you up, always comes to you awake to make sure you're dead.
Oh, that's a... But I mean,
it comes to you awake to make sure you're
how
dead.
How do you live with your neighbour if your neighbour is someone who you know is, if I could use the word, informer or a person who was it a grudge? Was it a
is something over years you learn to accept? That's just about all it is. You learn.
Yeah,
to accept it. You can't. If you hold that grudge or you hold that fear, you're going to poison your own children.
Have you spoken to many people about this?
I have four children there.
Yeah.
They mix with everybody. They mix with Catholics. They mix with Protestants. I have Protestant fellas I know for a lifetime that I would class as friends. So... I don't hold it against everybody. Over the years, like as you come back now, they got to 40 years. Over the years, you learn, you know. But I suppose, as far as I'm concerned, if they got arrested, the boys, some of them are now living in the south of Ireland, any of the team that time, if they got them back, I would like to see them jailed for what they've done. But that's not going to happen. Not now. That's not going to happen. You know, it's too long ago. It's like them up in Belfast now at the minute. We are watching them arguing and twisting over nothing. I'm in business here in the north. I do a lot of trade with the south of Ireland. Past remarks. And still and all, the ones up in Belfast... They're arguing to make it look good. Protestants is arguing about the Irish language to make it look good to the Protestant people. Sinn Féin's arguing about the Irish language to make it look good for their side of the house, and nobody's doing nothing. And the ordinary 5'8" man like myself is the boy that's suffering. At the end of the day, we are the people that's doing the suffering. The present day troubles ruined a lot of lives. It ruined a lot of young people. It bred a lot of hatred in the area. The only thing was that the main troubles in the north started in the ghettos. It started in the Bogside, the big housing estates, started in the Shankill. It only came out into the rural areas like ourselves. We have a mixed community. They're mostly farmers, small towns, and all the rest of it. And it came out, it spilled over out into that. They came out, they shot people in it. So they did. And it was the same in the troubles before, years before. They drove the farmers out of their houses. They shot them on the border. They left them, they shot the sons. So as the father had nobody to take it over. And that was the way the thing was done. And in the 70s, back in here, and nobody understands it. You were out on your own. Many's a night, my father got up in the middle of the night, people in the yard, and us out. You can see yourself, we're a long journey from anywhere. And you were living in fear, constant fear, for you didn't know what was going to happen next. And that's what was going on back that time.
When they talk about the legacy and the legacy of the Troubles,
yes.
Are you... would you be anxious to that it's correctly written into it, that people do know the stories, that do know the facts, what actually did happen?
I would be very interested to see that it is documented correctly. At the minute, they're trying to turn it around and make out they were persecuted, they were this, they were that. They were the Protestant people in the rural areas of Northern Ireland lived through hell in the 70s. It was either a case of join the local forces and try and protect yourselves in the area, or live in a locked up house in fear. Stay in the house from dark till daylight, go out into your work and go back in again. And people lived in fear. And a lot of members of the Catholic community knew what was going on, but if they said anything or tried to help, they were as bad as the enemy. Mm-hmm. And they couldn't say nothing or they could do nothing. And that was what people lived through. And I'm glad to say it's not there anymore. So it's not. But I wouldn't like to see it raise its head again, and I wouldn't like to see the way things was done. I know myself in this area here, the Protestants were pushed. Now, a lot of the local Catholics, I can't say nothing about them. It's like you go to Belfast. If Thorns Order goes out on parade, they can't go here, they can't go there, they can't go down there. They don't know their Protestant neighbour. The Catholic doesn't know his Protestant neighbour. The Protestant doesn't know his Catholic neighbour. Thrillick is a small village. It would be 90-something percent Catholic, but still in all, the Orange Order walks it every year. The Black Lodges walk it every year. The band walks it, and nobody says one hit. The community try to get on. They try to get on. It's a rural area, so it is. And the Protestants, it's mainly, as I say, it's mainly Catholic town. The Protestants come in and they shop on it and everything else, and there's no problem that way. And that's the way I'd like to see it. But yes, I would like it wrote. I'd like the history of what did happen. I'd like it noted. At the minute, they're trying to turn it around. It was all the British fault, the British fault, the British fault. It wasn't all the British fault. Because we had to live. They're talking about, oh, they didn't get this, they didn't get that. The Protestants didn't get it either.
Yeah. It's very complicated, isn't it?
You know, they're talking about they were done down and their livelihood and they weren't getting allowed this and they weren't that. We didn't get it. Mm-hmm. We didn't get it. When we were small, there was nothing special. If your mother had a bag of flour and a bag of spuds, that's what they raised the family on. There was no big flash. We were no better off here than Jimmy or Paddy or Sean down the road.
Yeah.
We were no better. That's all. We were reared the same as they were reared on. There was no difference. None whatsoever. And, you know, you think to hear, if you were listening to it, you'd think, oh, the Protestant people, they were living like royalty, and the Catholics was all in the gutter, and they were getting nothing, only the scrapings. We were no better than the man next door.
Yeah.
And that's what I'd like to get across, you know.
Yeah.
That's what you'd like to get across.
Your poor brother that was shot, that's fine, but it's the people who are left behind, they're the victims.
Yes, because the person that's gone, their troubles are over. They're finished. As I say, it wasn't every Catholic, it was a minority kept the troubles stirred up and kept the troubles going over the years. People in rural areas didn't really want it, but still in all, they couldn't open their mouth.
Yeah.
Then that's what it was. And you had one or two people in the area stirring the trouble and keeping it going. The ordinary 5/8 farmer, all he was interested in was luck of cattle and making luck of pound. He wasn't interested in it. He went to his bed at night. But still and all, the boys that was had nothing to do, they weren't working, they lay in the bed all day and they were out doing trouble at night. And that's what kept the whole thing going. And people don't want to go back to that. Nobody wants that. Your politicians is arguing and twisting. But if you went out to the ordinary person in the street, they don't want this torture and trouble. They want a quiet life. And that's all they want. They've been through trouble. They don't want to see their children now brought up the same as they had to come up. Yep. And see the same troubles on the streets. That's the only thing about out in the rural areas. The people do mix. You go into the towns and cities and housing estate, that's a Catholic estate, that's a Protestant estate. And they don't speak, they cut each other's throat, there's no difference in any one of them. And that is what's wrong. And I think actually what's wrong with this country at the minute is education. I think the sooner they start and educate the two of them together in the one school, and they can see that their neighbour is the same as they are,
yeah,
I think would be a big start to stopping the troubles.
Yeah. Well, there are a lot of people, I'm sure, that think like you and would like to see it happening.
Yes.
You spoke about your father
yes.
having to leave the south
yes.
in Cavan. What was the address? Whereabouts in the south did he live?
I lived in Bonboy, outside Cavan.
And in a farm?
In a farm, yeah. Yes, in a farm.
And you say he was driven, literally.
He was
driven
literally
out.
Driven out of it. He had to get out. He had no other choice.
And that was in the late
40s? That was, they came here in 1950. Robert was born here the year after they come here, 1950.
Yeah.
So he was. And
how easy was it to settle down? I know you were... what year were you
well,
born?
Well, I was only born in 1957.
Yeah.
So I was. And I would be born and reared here, as the, so I was. But now, it wouldn't have been easy for them. It was not easy for them. Yeah. When they came here... You had my father and mother, and my grandfather and grandmother came here, and they settled here, and bought the place, and worked hard for a number of years to pay for it.
Yeah.
Because when they left the south, it was very, very, very hard to sell the place or get a pound for it. For the new you were going, they knew you had to get out, and they wanted the place for nothing. So when they came down here, they had nothing.
Yeah.
And they had to work hard, very hard for a number of years to pay for it.
Mm.
So they had.
It's extraordinary. And how circumstances were so bad in that mm-hmm. you've suggested, and that it was so difficult to pick up and go. And I'm surprised you're telling me that there was absolutely no bitterness at all against.
No, there was no bitterness against the two communities split. For a while, you know, so they did, and they were afraid of each other. That's what they're afraid of. No Catholics wanted to be seen chatting to us, in case there was reprisal against them for talking to us. It took years, and I suppose our generation coming up, we were young at the time, mixing, and then as my mother got older, My mother was 50 odd when my father died, so she was a young woman. We thought she was old, but yeah. She was a young woman. Mm. And my mother then, when she got on in years, she was different things belonged to the church. And then the next thing is they started up a pensioners group for Protestant Catholics in the area. My mother used to go to things like that. And there was a bowls group, and those different things started up in the over the years. And of course, my mother lived there until she was 88 years of age, and up until 2 years before she died, she was in a lot of them groups, met a lot of them people, and that was more or less what would have brought her back in. And then was chatting to the Catholic community, and they could never understand how my mother was able to talk to them. Or forgive them for what happened.
Yeah.
It was very hard. It was there. That she had a very big funeral on a Sunday in January. And I would say 25% of the people at that funeral were Catholics.
Yeah.
Because they respected her. You know, they did respect her. My mother wasn't one for retaliation. My mother wasn't one. She came from the south. She's seen what happened in the south in her younger days. She was born and reared in it until she got married, and she came down here. So she knew. My mother knew, you know,
yeah.
what happened before. So she did.
And, so it's very hard then to decide. You're coming from the south. You're coming up here, and this battle, this war was going on between
yeah.
Catholics and Protestants and the North and the South. Did you see yourself as Irish, or did you see yourself as part of the United Kingdom? Or
no, you seen yourself as part of the United Kingdom. You did. You seen yourself as part of it. Didn't. What was the way you put it? And a certain amount of me is still the same. You were ashamed to be Irish.
Oh, you're not serious.
You were ashamed to be Irish.
Yeah.
Because of what was going on. Because of what was happening in the name of Irish.
Yeah, that you were actually...
You were ashamed to be Irish. Now, if you went outside Ireland, you didn't want to tell anybody you were from Ireland. And you didn't want to let on you were from Ireland. Of course, when you opened your mouth, they knew. But you didn't want people knowing you were Irish. Because if you were Irish, as a tag, you were a troublemaker. Because of what was going on in Northern Ireland. That's what you were. You did not want anyone to know you were from Ireland. Definitely not. No.
And so... you know, the games, and when Ireland are playing, it doesn't matter, you're not shouting.
Well, I'm not shouting for... I'm not a sports person. Either football, or GAA, or any sort of sport, I'm not really... I never was, I'm not really interested.
Yeah.
Yes. years ago, you just... If it was a Gaelic match, oh, that's the South. That's nothing to do with us.
Foreign game.
If it was rugby or something, it was Northern Ireland team. Oh, that's ours.
Yeah.
GAA is the other side of the house. That's nothing to do with us. You know, now you like to see them doing well. Like, you know, yeah, I know Tyrone was beat there a couple of weeks ago. You know, nowadays you would listen in and you'd say, well, you know, Tyrone's still a part of your own.
Yeah.
It's we're Tyrone. I'm living Tyrone, so you know, you take a wee bit more interest.
How close are you to Fermanagh then? Are you just down the road, or
Fermanagh is only about, it wouldn't be 3 miles away?
Yeah,
you know.
Imagine, yeah.
We're what they call the border counties.
Yeah,
and the border counties. We're not talking about the bombs in Belfast and something like that, but the border counties suffered a lot during the Troubles. My wife. My niece was blew up in a bomb.
What was her name?
Lorraine Muldoon. The fellas, they went to look at a house, her and the boyfriend, they were buying a house, they were going to get married. And they came back, got out of the father's car, and the young fella got into his own car, and they drove from here, I suppose, down to the Ontario, and the bomb went off, and he was blew in bits.
There was a bomb planted underneath the car.
He was in the UDR, and he suffered. She lost her eye. She lost her hearing in one side, ear, and she was all, you know, deformed down that side. And my wife was from Castlederg, another hotspot. And my wife's class, that was the fellas that was in her class, the most of them are dead over the head of the Troubles.
Imagine. Yeah. Most what was your wife's name?
She was Reed, Alberta Reed.
Yeah.
And the most of her classmates are all dead. They were either blew up. They didn't believe in shooting you down there, they blew you up. Farmer went to lift his cattle tiller, put it on, and there was a bomb under the cattle tiller, and when he lifted it up she go, bang. Booby trapped the tractors. Booby trap this, booby trap that. It was another nightmare to live down there. And, you know, and as I say, my wife, I had it on my side through my brother, and my wife had it on her side through her niece. And a lot of people that she knew were all killed in Castlederg. You know, another hotbed on the border. Farmers living on the border, push them back, push them out. And that's what it was all about, you know.
It's like ethnic cleansing.
Ethnic cleansing, yes, that is right. Yeah. That is just what it was, and that's what they done on the borders after the country was divided and partition was set up, and that was way back, as you know yourself, in the 1916s, and now it was, but the main exodus of Protestants out of the south of Ireland was in the late 40s. That's when they pushed them out. So they did, and pushed them out of the border areas. And they all came down to live in the north of Ireland. So they did.
Well, do you know, your story is amazing. I mean, it's when you listen to people like you express and talk about exactly what it was that went on, that you realise the pain, the suffering, the trauma that you had to live with for all those years.
It's something we don't talk about.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Yeah, we don't talk about it.
I'm absolutely...
We don't really talk about it, and it's like the soldier that went out to war. And what the soldier seen on the battlefields and brought home with him, he never talked about. He kept it to himself. It died with him.
Yeah.
And it was the same. It was the same here in the Troubles. You were living every night when it got dark. You were living when I was a child. The only thing kept us was, oh, Daddy's in the house. Daddy'll keep us safe. That's the fear you lived when I was going to school as a child. That's the fear. Daddy's here.
Okay. And that was
Daddy would have been an ex-member himself of the forces years before when he lived up on the border in Florence Court. You know. And Daddy's here. And that kept you. That kept you. That was the feeling how you kept you safe. You know. So it was.
Yeah.
And that's what it was. So it was. And there was a lot of young people that time. As I say, my brother worked. He was a mechanic. He worked his lifetime. He was only on the UDR about 2 years because he was only a young fella. And he didn't stand a chance. It'd been different if somebody came up to you and faced you. Or if you were, they're talking about war. As far as I'd be concerned, war, there were trenches there and trenches here. But what was war? And that's the way I thought of it when I was younger. How would you call war stepping out behind somebody when they're walking up past you and shooting them in the back? Two men armed against a young lad with his hands in his pockets. And that's the way he was found, hunched over his lunch bag with his hands in his pockets. 21.
And so he was a member of the UDR.
He didn't stand a chance. Yeah.
Was he wearing a uniform?
No. He was coming from work.
Okay.
He was a mechanic in the bus depot. He was a mechanic in the bus depot up on over in Oma. And he came home on the bus. My mother met him every evening. So we did. We had cattle that time in the field at the road, and my father still to the day maintained it was all set up. The cattle were open, the gate was open, and the cattle was let out on the road.
Yeah.
So it was my father and me went up to put the cattle in, and then and sometimes it was my father went out and lifted them, and instead of my father going out to lift them, it was my mother went out to lift them that evening, and when she went out, the car was speeding away, and he was laying in the middle of the road in a lump.
Yeah.
So he was.
Esmond, thank you for telling me your story. Mm-hmm. You know, it is when you piece together all the stories that you realise the troubles and what it mm-hmm. was that went on up here.
The people down south, as far as we're concerned, don't realise what happened in the north. We still have relations in the south of Ireland. Mm. And during the Troubles years, they wouldn't come into the north.
Yeah.
Because they had this notion in their head that those gunmen stand with guns round every corner.
Yeah, it was.
They had this notion, oh, it's a no-go area. It wasn't like that. Even this area, it wasn't like that. It was boys that had nothing to do came in and shot you or whatever they'd done. You know. And then the rest of us, we had to try and gather the pieces and keep going on. It was a farming community. You still had to milk your cows. You still had to do the rest of it. My father had to get on. He was a pedigree Hereford breeder. With four or five neighbours would be pedigree Hereford breeders that time too. They were Catholic neighbours. And I don't know what way to put it. It must have been very, very hard for them people to meet my father and my father to meet them after it.
Yeah.
Because the way it was looked at, I suppose back in the height of the Troubles, every Catholic was bad and every Protestant was bad.
Yes.
That's the way they know. Yes. And they looked at each other with fear. It's like the old saying, which was a true statement, there was two neighbours and they were very good friends for a lifetime. One was Catholic, one was Protestant. And the Catholic man was dying. And the Protestant neighbour went to see him. And the Catholic neighbour put everybody out of the room. And he says to the Protestant neighbour, he says, the longest day you're living, he says, don't you ever thrust one of us?
Yeah.
Man says, the Protestant man says, what do you mean by that? He says, sure, I know your lifetime. Nothing to do with it, he says. If I was told to shoot you, he says, I'd have to do it. or he said, I'd be shot myself.
Oh, and that's the way it was?
That's the way it was. And that was one neighbour took another neighbour, a very, very close friend. And that was the way it was. Your man Clark down at Castlederg was shot. He was riddled. And him and the Catholic neighbour, every week, Sunday in life, went away, actually went down south some Sundays. And one Sunday only, Catholic neighbour rung and says, I can't go there, I have to go away. Your man drifted down the road and he was riddled.
Yeah.
He was told, don't you be in that car. Or you get it too. You know.
Oh, that is.
So there was a lot of Catholic people under duress as well. They don't know what they had to do what they were told.
Yeah.
You know yourself, if they said anything, what happened to them? If a Catholic neighbour said anything, he was shot.
So we're living in a different country now, though. I mean, there is peace. There is this, as you say, you're bringing your family up now.
There's peace. You're trying to keep. But what I would call it is a false peace. People are living in peace, but they're living in fear.
Still?
Yes. People are still in fear. They're still afraid. They know the politicians is doing nothing. They're keeping the thing dragged on and dragged on and dragged on. They're bringing up, you're never going to put anybody away from my brother, mother. Jimmy down the road, his brother was murdered. But it's hard, I don't know what way you do it, but there's never going to be justice now for either side of the community and what happened. They're digging up. They're trying to put blame on this one for that. They're trying to say it's police collusion, it's this collusion, it's that. And they're digging holes. They're spreading the hatred in what they're at the minute. And I can't see it ever coming to... I don't want my young lads in 5 years or 10 years' time bringing up a family and still looking over the shoulder. It's not on. At the minute, yes, the next generation, my generation, you're never going to get my generation with the thrust they should have, even in the priest process. It's the next generation we're hoping that's not going to have the same hatred.
Yeah.
That's what we're hoping. That's what I'm hoping. But it's still been bred. It's in certain areas. It's still been bred in the children. It's pumped into the children. That it's educated into the children, one way or the other. You know, their views, and that's wrong. My young lads, Thrillick's a mixed town. Always has been a mixed town. The mix in the pubs. The mix at night out for a night's crack. The pensioners' things are still going, and all that. Yes. The older generation will always be suspicious of their neighbour. They'll never be that full thrust. What would you say, the best way to say it? They're tolerating them.
Yeah, yeah.
They never but really thrust them. My young lads are brought up here. We didn't chat much about the Troubles. They know my brother was shot and all that, but it's not, we don't pump it into them. As the man says, my son has been at a pile of Catholic weddings there this last lot of years, young lads he runs about with. So they must think something of him when they ask him. And he's asked, you know, yeah. And they go to different things, they go away, different places, which I'm glad to see.
Yeah.
And then you have some out investigation, the prop that comes up and starts up and pops his head up. And you'll hear them, oh, this was so-and-so doing this and so-and-so done that. And they start to throw names, which shouldn't be done, for I would name nobody. Names shouldn't be through unless you know definitely what way it was. For all you're doing is starting something else. And you have the young ones now, they'll get away. But the older people, as I say, the older people, we're putting up with it. We're depending on the youth coming up to stabilise the country. And that's what it's all about, is stabilising the country. And this old crap that they have, and Michelle O'Neill, who should have more wit. I thought the only way this country's going to have a bit of stability is when all the older politicians are dead.
All right. Yeah.
And the younger ones start coming up with a wee bit of sense.
Yeah.
But Michelle O'Neill, as far as I'm concerned, she's not the leader of Sinn Féin. She's only a puppet for Gerry Adams. Martin McGuinness may have been a terrorist, a bomber, a murderer, and all the rest of it. But Martin McGuinness tried.
Yeah.
He tried to join the people, and there was a lot of things when the assembly was going that he kept the assembly going. And him and Paisley, or him and your whatever, argued about it and tried to get through it. But at the present moment in time, they don't want to be together.
No. No.
I have come to conclusion now that they don't want to be together. The way it was before this was, I get a wee bit more. I get another wee bit. The Protestants will give another wee bit. And this seems the way it's going on. And now it's got to the stage where they're saying, we'll give you everything. What more can we give you now?
Yes. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And that, it's going to be a long time.
It's not in my generation.
Yeah.
Or the next one, maybe.
Yeah.
You know. And as the man says, we do a lot of business in the south of Ireland. I'm selling cars and do a lot of business down south of Ireland. Yes, you're talking to somebody in the border areas. But once you go down heading for Dublin or Cork or that, they don't want to know about the north.
Yeah.
They don't want to know about you. They don't care.
But this project is going to try and make amends. And help out to in its own way, in its own. I mean, if there's enough of these projects, yeah, it will work. But this particular project hopefully will bring sides together.
Well, you see, what it is, that's what the problem is. Catholic person doesn't know the Protestant side. The Protestant doesn't know the Catholic side because they don't speak.
But if you get them talking, then it'll work.
How do you get them talking?
Well, we're going to try.
You know what I'm saying? How do you get them talking? Yeah. It's like my mother going to the pensioners' things and, you know, different groups and one thing and another. And the Catholic community couldn't understand how my mother could go and speak to them and get to, you know, and know them as neighbours then, you know.
Yeah.
And they never could understand how my mother could accept that some of them were their son.
I know.
But... I know. My mother, because she's seen torture in a young day and she's seen what happened in the south, she lived with it. She did not at any time in her lifetime or after Robert was murdered did she put hatred or anything into us. Never. That was one thing my mother never done, and she very seldom ever said anything.
She must
it.
Have been a very strong character, strong-minded.
She was. She worked hard. When they come down here first, she was out in the fields here with my father working at the hay or whatever. There was no money that time to get help in. She was out helping to get the place paid for. And my grandfather, while he was able, he died in his 90s. Before the troubles really started, he died in the 60s. And my granny would have been in the house. It was her reared us until we were big enough to go out and help.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was like everything else. You grew up, you went to a Protestant primary school, you went to a Protestant secondary school. You never mixed with the Catholic community.
Yeah.
And that's what the biggest mistake is. As far as we were concerned, the Catholic had two heads on them. You know. And... it was the same. The other side, it was the same. There was no difference.
Yeah. Esmond, I appreciate you telling me your story. Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm talking to Alberta.
Uh-huh.
Jemson. Now. But what was your maiden name?
Reid. My maiden name was Reid.
Oh, where did you come from originally?
A little village called Spamond outside Castle Derrick.
So how many siblings in your family? How many of you?
I have three sisters, all older.
And what were their names?
Lillian, Marion and Evelyn.
And were you the eldest? Or
no, I was the youngest as a baby. None of them ever married. One, she was just married to a local man from the village, and they had family and all, and then their children grew up and everything. Their daughter, then she was about 18 at the time. She started going with a little local lad from Spamond, and they were out one night at Bowles, and they always come back to his house, had a cup of tea, and then he left her home. This night they went out to the Bowles, came back, went to his house, only in about 10 or 15 minutes, had a cup of tea. They were going out to go home, and came out, got into the car, went about 50, 60 yards, and the car blew up.
Because there was a bomb?
There had been a bomb planted, yeah, underneath it. Within them few minutes that they had been in, you know, his mum's house.
So he was being watched, obviously.
Obviously, yeah. Yeah.
Who did this?
IRA.
And why? Why do you think he was...
Well, he was just a young lad, 18, and he joined the UDR, supposedly like for a bit of extra money and stuff like that, you know, because they were for getting married and, you know, and they'd obviously been watching. And so inside them 10 or 15 minutes, they had planted a bomb underneath the car.
What year was this?
'85.
And so where exactly? 86. Yes.
January, I think, 86.
Was
sorry.
It?
Yeah.
And in the location, where exactly was the place they were? You know, where the when the car exploded. Mm-hmm. Where you were saying they were in your mother's house?
Yeah, we were. Yeah. Where it exploded, our houses were here, and then there was a field and another road, and you could see the other park. They were at that park over there, and they'd just left. So they only got about 50 yards until the car exploded.
And tell me what happened afterwards.
He was killed outright, as far as I can remember now. It's a long time ago. He was killed outright. She was very badly injured. Of course, UDR, our police, everything landed, you know, cordoned off everything and ambulances and all, but she was taken to intensive care and hospital. She lost an eye then over the head of it all. She had quite a lot of damage, you know, leg, arm, stuff like that, but she had lost her eye as well in the bomb.
And was she marked down by the side?
Oh, yeah. Because the bomb had been placed under more or less the driver's seat, you see. So the driver got the full impact, but like she got quite a bit as well.
What was his name?
Victor Foster.
Imagine. And he was so young.
Just 18. They were both just 18.
Yeah. And your sister, her name again, sorry, is
the
girl that...
Yeah, Marion, her sister. Her mum was Marion, my sister.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Marion, she's still alive now.
Oh, yeah. She is.
How did she take that? How did she live with that? I mean, did it affect her mentally afterwards?
I think it did, yeah. You know, it obviously does, the things that happen, you know.
Yeah.
So it does, but she's coping like with life now as time goes on. Like the daughter Lorraine did pull out of it, you know, but it was quite bad. She did pull out of it, and she has went on now to, you know, have a normal life. That's what you would call normal.
Yeah.
You know.
But always watching probably over her shoulder.
Yeah, for a long time. Yeah, for a long time. And then, you know, when she did get up and start going out again, you know, they used to... I remember her saying that when she went to the town, drove the car to the town, you know, there would have been slurs thrown at her and things like that, you know. Now, what they were now, I don't remember, you know, but obviously slurs like, you know, about, oh, you know, you're still here or something like that.
What town was this?
This was Castlederg.
Really?
Yeah.
And would that be a very Republican town, would you say? Or?
Yeah, no, it would, yeah.
Would it?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And was she bitter? You know, like, did she hate the IRA for doing this?
Yeah, she did, but through time, you know, that bitterness is gone. She's got on with life and things like that. But for a lot of years after it, now when it would come to the anniversary now, she would be very bad.
Yeah.
A couple of months, you know, she'd be very bad. She'd come out of that way.
And that's really, and to your mother, she must have been shocked.
She was horrified. She was very, very bitter.
When was there any other incident that happened during the Troubles that affected your family?
Just knowing people that had been murdered, blew up or what. Like at school, there were six boys in my class that I went through school with that were all murdered. That's and they're 18s, 19s, and 20s.
And they were victims of the Troubles, just?
Yeah. They were.
And you went to all those funerals, probably, or two, or at least you knew a lot of them.
Most of them, yeah. And each one you go to, you get more better.
Yeah. How do you
feel? You know, a young lad of 18, 19, out doing their work, come back, sitting waiting for them, riddle them. Or go out in the morning to go to their work and start their van or car, a few yards and bang.
And so how do you feel now? I mean, after, you know, looking back at those years.
How do you feel now? I would still be better yet. Not as much maybe, but I still would be quite better.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, to live through all that and to come out.
I mean, some of them were lovely lads. They weren't doing nothing wrong. They thought that by joining, you know, maybe the security forces, they're doing their bit and, you know, trying to keep trouble at bay and stuff like that. But, you know, they really targeted all the, you know, the young ones.
And tell me, what school was this?
This was Castle Derrick High School.
Yeah, and so, yeah, you knew them all there personally. Yeah. And
some of them, you know, some of them were in my year and some of them were actually in my class.
Yeah.
You know, but you did know them pretty well, the ones in your class, you knew them pretty well.
Was Castle Derrick really badly, was it a hotbed? Like, was it, did it suffer an awful lot?
They did, I think Castle Derrick was, yeah. They brought more bombs into Castle Derrick, blew it up, blew up the police station, shot the people, blew them up, and even the town itself, quite a few bombs brought in and blown up.
I see. And when you married Esmond at that stage, what year did you marry, can you recall?
1983, I think it was, yeah, I remember.
Okay, was that just the year before Esmond's brother was good? Was that... Can you remember?
Well, you see, I don't really know Esmond's brother.
Yeah.
I think it was the year before we started going out or something like that, you know, that had happened to him. I never really knew him.
Yeah.
You know.
And so the two of you living really with those memories, it must have been. Yeah. And to bring up your family now, would you rather kind of keep all that away from them, or?
Oh no, you told them. You didn't lie, you told them. They'll be very careful who they're out with, who they're run about with, things like that.
Yeah.
You know, be careful, you know, don't get into hassles, don't just watch people, be careful, stay away. Stay more or less in your own religion type of thing, you know, not to get too involved with any others.
Yeah. But is that right too? I mean, is that a way of not wanting to mix with the other side, or not wanting to?
Oh, no. You used to tell them, mix, be nice, because there's a lot of nice ones too. Be nice, mix and all, but when come to anything serious, you know, stay to your own.
And that's still the way. So you just scratched the surface and it, really the trouble is still there, is it?
Oh, the troubles will always be there.
Is that how you feel? Yes.
Mm-hmm, because it has never, it eased down for a while, but you can see things happening again.
Yeah. And does it matter that, do you know, that they are people who are trying to bring people together to talk to, maybe.
Oh, no, that's nice. Yeah, you know, that's nice that they're trying to bring people and everything, you know, together. But when you listen to the news, it's still always one-sided. Always one-sided, you know.
What side?
Nowadays, even, you know, there was more sort of, I think the Protestant side is getting really rough now.
And is it because politically or what
well,
way?
Both politically, every way sort of, because they've all got top jobs, they've all got this, that and other. You apply for some of the things because of who you are. You know, you don't get it.
Oh, really? It's kind of... And being, if you don't mind me asking, being from this area and growing up and your tradition, you were born into the Church of Ireland, is that
Presbyterian,
right? Oh, Presbyterian. Yeah. And your husband is also Presbyterian.
Oh, he's Church of Ireland.
Oh, is he? All right. So, does everybody kind of... would suggest that if I could rephrase this, how do you feel about being Irish then? Do you feel that you're British and part of the UK? Or?
Yeah, I'm British and part of the UK, because Northern Ireland's part of the UK.
And do you see the cut-off point then, the border, and the south of Ireland is a different country?
Yes, well, it is a different country, but still, you know, you can go down, up and down, whatever, you know, and you can mix, like, you know, that type of thing. I don't think it too bad.
But it's interesting to note that.
You know, but to put it squarely, I'm British.
Yeah.
This is my country, that's another country. But, you know, the two countries, you do have to travel up and down, and there's a lot of nice people each side and everything like that, and a lot of people do travel up and down and go places and things like that. You know, but that's that country, this is this country.
And, you know, kind of, do you like the idea then that maybe people should respect one another's beliefs and traditions? And
Yes, just have everybody their own beliefs, traditions, whatever, carry on. There's no call for half this. I mean, years and years ago, from what I gather, before there was anything, you know, people went out to the church, people went to the chapel. When it was over, they came together, they met, they went out, maybe out to parties and things like that. Then, you know, there was no such thing as religion then, or brought into it. They all blame it on religion and everything, you know. But each to their own, yes, their own beliefs. But don't force it and push it on other people.
Alberta, listen, thank you so much for talking to me. I appreciate it so much indeed.